Satanic International Network. You're listening to the news.
I'm on the cage. Every foul wicked spirit is the host, the news.
20 minutes, that Gorilla Bay, on the news, right now.
On the news, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really happen to have a serial current
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm TC Downey, aka Beast Zeno, and with me on the line is my co-host Dan Dredd. Dan, how are you this fine Saturday morning?
I feel like $1 million, Beast. How are you?
I'm excellent, man. I'm getting ready to move at the beginning of this next week. Getting into a new place is always kind of a fresh start for me. I like that.
Yeah, it's always nice having a new place. The process of moving itself is always quite the bitch, though. But, I mean, you know, that only takes a day or two, so it's all right.
Yeah, it only takes a day or two. For me, since I'm a minimalist by my living standards, it's not a real difficult thing at all. I don't have a ton of shit to move. I can do my whole house in a 10-foot U-Haul.
Really? Yeah, more of a 30-foot U-Haul guy myself, but that's cool. 30-foot U-Haul and maybe a couple of truckloads. But anyway, yeah, that makes it a lot easier.
It makes it a ton easier. I discovered some time ago that if you're not careful, your possessions begin to own you. I woke up one morning and looked around my house, and there was all this shit, all these things. Everything seemed to be distracting me, and I just couldn't get my thoughts clear for anything. And that was it. I started chucking shit out and selling shit on Craigslist, and got down to bare knuckles of what I needed, and then from there, everything that I own has to serve at least two purposes.
And what would those two purposes be, Beast?
It depends. Like, for instance, a bed. My bed looks nice and it's comfortable. Those are my two purposes right there.
So if your bed was ugly, you wouldn't want to sleep in it?
If my bed was ugly, I would get rid of it and sleep on the floor. That's right.
Yeah, I don't really care, man. If it's comfy, I'm good. I'm good. That's cool.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the whole point of owning anything is to have something nice, right?
Well, nice and functional. I guess those could be the two things.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah, fair enough, man. Fair enough.
Right, So, Dan, we've got a lot of talking points to go through today, so I guess I'm just going to go ahead and let you kind of introduce what we're talking about and then move us into whatever the first point of it is. So.
Oh, well, you know, the topic today, I guess, would just be a general dialogue on the machine that we are all either willingly, unwillingly, knowingly, or unknowingly a part of, you know, the society at large and all the things that kind of keep us moving in a certain direction, you know, the same direction as everyone else. All the things that kind of keep us on track and on course. All of this is bullshit, right? And this is a few reasons why I think that is, you know. So I don't even really know where to start with that. I mean, look at time itself. That's a good place, if any, to start. I mean, you know, we measure time in AD, you know. And what does AD really stand for? It's Anno Domini, you know, the year of our Lord. But if you translate the word Domini, it really means domination or slavery. So we're living in the age of slavery, and it's even, you know, it's written on our calendars.
Right. Now, I'm assuming by slavery, it's not the same form of slavery that over the years we've come to, you know, detest. There's no real literal chains to us most of the time. It's all proverbial, and it's all like bureaucratic red tape, blue tape, whatever you want to call it, that holds us where we're at.
Well, ultimately, we have two freedoms in society. We have the freedom to eat and the freedom to starve, which is basically the freedom to work and be part of the machine, or the freedom to try to be separate from it, you know. But society is rigged in such a way that becoming separate from it is, you know, quite hard and often detrimental. So really, we're not that free at all. We're just as equally enslaved as those that are wearing chains.
Yes. Oh, I agree with that. Absolutely. I'm just trying to actually get some kind of a context as to the type of slavery that we're talking about. Because, I mean, in a sense, anything that you kind of submit yourself to that's not necessarily desirable can become a form of slavery. I don't want to say that it starts off as a form of slavery, but can definitely become a form of slavery. You know, this is one of the reasons why monogamy sometimes doesn't work for people.
Oh, well, certainly. That's a good example, you know. This is overarching impetus. And this is, I heard you describe the Magian. You're trying to talk about the ONA concept of Magian, and that's what the Magian means is it's basically the Judeo-Christian memeplex and those that would use it to manipulate others. That is the basic definition of the Magian. And that extends far past religion. It extends into government. It extends into the family hierarchy. You know, an enshrinement of the nuclear family over the extended family, which is something that is really very Christian. It extends, obviously, into religion, into the media, into the ideas of consumerism, and the ideas of economics. It's a very wide-branching sort of thing, you know. And I was going somewhere with this, but I've lost my point, so maybe we can get back on it.
Right on. Well, I think we were aiming towards actually describing different types of slavery that you may well be experiencing and aren't aware of it. At least that's where it seemed to be going. That would be why you were bringing up the diversity of the actual Magian force or whatever you want to call it.
It's really a more of a memeplex, you know. This is a word that I've really become attached to, like a series of self-propagating ideas that sort of bounce from one person to the next and become strengthened in people's minds as they continue from generation to generation. Like, you know, you have sort of this cyclical strengthening of it by those that benefit by it, but they're also, you know, already infected by it from previous generations and what they've themselves been exposed to. And then it is picked up further by, you know, the white knights of society, you know, those people that are so deeply infected by these ideas and, like, the truth of them that they take up their shield to fight for it. And, of course, their shield is always oddly in the shape of a moral compass, but that's beside the point. You know, and they seek to protect it from any sort of dissension, you know, the ones that will browbeat you for behaving, you know, incorrectly, the religious, the patriotic, you know, the ones that are all about... you know, USA or whatever country they're from, you know, that sort of unite behind that banner, or the believers in political correctness and objective right and wrong, you know, the dualists, and then there's the sort of mundane types that will buy the whole package, hook, line, and sinker, and demonify those that do not, and then, you know, the cycle sort of propagates itself. Lawbreakers are always cast as bad, evil people, but really, I mean, the laws are just, you know, the will of this sort of overarching force that is not really any of our individual wills. It's just something that we've come to accept as being legitimate without really ever questioning why, for the most part.
Right on. All right. Hang on just one quick second, Dan. Let me see if I can switch over to my headphones, okay?
Yeah, sure thing, buddy.
All right.
So, Beast.
Yeah. All right. So where are we in this whole ordeal? I kind of lost my train of thought when I realized I could finally start hearing. So.
Beast, before we continue, your volume is quite low. Quite low. I'm having trouble hearing you.
How's that? That better?
This is better.
This is better.
Okay. Only I can hear myself as well. Echoes. All
right. How about now?
I don't know. Can I hear myself? Not really so much. Okay. So I'm getting a slight echo still, but not on the same scale. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing technical difficulties. Please be patient.
That's a pretty normal thing for us here on the U.S. to have technical difficulties.
Yeah. I can actually still hear myself talking when I... Oh, there it goes. All right, I think you fixed it. Good job, Beast.
Awesome. Yeah, got myself... all right, so back to the machine, because I really do think that a lot of things... immediately hook us into this long before we ever actually even come to realize that, wait a minute, you know, I'm kind of stuck in this whole process that I have to do. I mean, it starts all the way at having parents, you know, and having the inability to actually question your parents about anything. You know, their word is final. I mean, you can voice your opinion, but ultimately they have the ability to make you do whatever it is that they want you to do.
Exactly, and this sort of brings me back to my prior point about the enshrinement of the nuclear family over the extended family. You know, we're and this is a very Christian thing. This is not a this whole idea of the nuclear family is not, you know, universal to the world, but. Like if you look in, like, say, countries like India or China, their cousins and their extended cousins are considered family on the same level as, like, their brothers and sisters, right? So we're taught that, you know, our parents are the ultimate authorities over us, and this sort of seeds the soil for acceptance of, you know, these larger overarching Meijin concepts of God and government and, you know, the political correctness and the social correctness and all these other things.
Right on. I mean, I know the Celtic culture actually was clan based. You know, the as a matter of fact, as the transitions to the Dark Ages were coming, there was a figure of expression that became popular, and I forget by who, but that figure of expression was that it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah, I've heard that one. And it's it's a truism. You know, if you're only being raised. Like it kind of contributes to the way that, you know, people are nowadays, because you're only being raised by two people, you know, you're getting a very limited perspective on the world, and thus, you know, you have a lot of people with very limited, narrow worldviews, you know, that will only sort of accept things that fall within a very narrow category, and really this serves the entire machine. This is an integral part of the machine, that this nuclear family structure is kind of the base. You know, it sort of, like I say, seeds the soil for religion and all these other ideas of top-down authority and submitting of the self to something greater, you know, enshrining of the greater good over the individual good. These sorts of ideas, you know, that are taken as axiomatic by most people. You know.
Right. I mean, from the beginning, you're kind of beat into submission, unless you have a parenting style that's like mine, where I try to always embrace and recognize the fact that my child is being rebellious to something that I'm saying, and instead of using some kind of iron-fisted force with him, I try to reason as to why it's more beneficial for him to, you know, operate the way that I'm showing him versus just blatantly submit to whatever it is that I'm trying to get him to do. And I don't want to break that spirit in him.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not a parent myself, so I can't really offer any salient insight into it. But it seems to me that, you know, if you teach a child, you know, not to accept anything without good reason or satisfying logic, although I guess the child isn't really the most logical being, so that's kind of a catch-22, but... You know, once you've broken their spirit and you've taught them that, you know, their will is you know, secondary to, you know, God or government or politicians or the good of humanity, you know, supersedes the good of the one, or these sorts of ideas that are very, you know, very Abrahamic in origin, you know, even though they extend far past, you know, many, many people that self-describe as atheists or Buddhists or, you know, any of these other religions are still playing the game, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, what I'm actually kind of been curious about, and I think the largest, the biggest of this memoplex that you're describing actually happens to be God Money. the dollar bill, and I don't necessarily mean the American dollar bill, but I mean the idea of a trade economy. It sets it up in such a fashion that everybody has to succumb to it. I mean, even the little tribe in Uganda, they've got to succumb to it to a point. You can't escape it. It's kind of like the largest field, as far as I can see, for the slave machine.
Oh, certainly. It's certainly, you know, the biggest, most muscly arm of the Magian, for sure. I mean, you know, we have, like I said, we there's an impetus to participate in the economic system. We have the freedom to eat or the freedom to starve, you know. And this is all based on these sort of top-down economic models, you know, like the Keynesian model, as opposed to the Austrian, that are sort of built to sustain these unsustainable government entities, you know, through, like, you know, means of fiat currency and whatnot and so forth. I'm hardly an economist, but I do have sort of a general grasp on this sort of concept.
You're right. I certainly have a general grasp of it myself, being that I've participated in the business world my entire adult life. I've seen these things kind of come down, and it always kind of blows my mind at the fact that people all come to this idea that you have to trade something. And I'm not really sure where that comes from. I mean, what necessitates the idea that, hey, I've got to give something to get something, is beyond me. You know, I mean, it's obviously not that way in nature. If you want something and you can't negotiate for it, you can always just take it by strong force. And I mean, that happens on higher levels, but when you get down to, I don't know, our level, blue collar, whatever you want to say, it's nearly impossible to do that without suffering something for it.
That's a very salient point. You know, I have my own idea about that. I think that, you know, man, like all great apes, is naturally tribal as an animal, and, you know, tribal tribal animals are generally, you know, they talk about altruism, right? But altruism has been distorted through the system that we now exist, so it's kind of like a broken concept. But if you're living in a tribe, you know, and you're out hunting with your buddies, you know, to because you have to eat, you know, You're contributing what you can for your own good, and also for the good of your people, you know, for your immediate tribe. So I think it kind of boils down to that, you know, and then it sort of gets distorted in the sort of Magian system that we now exist, whereas it becomes, you know, we have this sort of deep down sort of feeling that, you know, to do for our people. But, you know, we have society telling us that our people is everybody, which is very unnatural, but it's kind of, you know, you can sort of see how this concept has been distorted into what it is now, you know, into the trade system.
Right. You can definitely see how it's broken down over the years. It's just, I don't even know. I mean, this whole thing is so much bigger than myself. I'm not really certain that I can extend my own vantage outside of it to see what should really be happening. But I can tell you that I myself, as a good father, I don't have the ability to do that, because I have a court of law with their hands right in the way, saying, "Oh no, you know, because the mother gave birth to the child, she's a more suitable parent. She should have more." And it's those kind of injustices, I think, that really make us angry about being part of the system. And I mean, ultimately, really, it's those type of injustices that ultimately led to me sticking up my finger and saying, fuck you to the world. I'll participate enough to get by, but if I've got a chance to act outside of your rules without having to suffer your consequence, you're goddamn right I'm going to.
Yeah, well, that really boils down to, you know, the sort of feeling, and this is sort of a net effect of the system itself, that the system itself is legitimate, you know, like that governments themselves are legitimate entities, and that we, you know, that we really should submit to them, you know. And this is a meme that is everywhere. I mean, most people believe this. And really, what is a government other than a monopoly of force over a certain geographical region. You know, and if you think of it in that context, what really separates a government from a mafia or a criminal gang? And really, the bottom line, the only thing that separates these things is that some people accept them as legitimate. Their rhetoric is good enough that they've convinced us, you know, they've sort of put us to sleep with it and convinced us that these government entities and that everything that they have to say and all their rules are you know, legitimate and that we should be following them. But in reality, in my opinion, they're not legitimate. You know, they're no different than a criminal organization that can, you know, if you don't follow their rules, they can show up at your door with guns and take you off to jail. You know, how's that different than fucking Benny and Gino showing up at your fucking door if you don't pay your you know, your drug debt? You know, it's the same fucking thing. Only one is seen as legitimate in the eyes of society, and the other is seen as a criminal element. Really, it's all the same of the same shit. You know, it's a matter of them convincing us otherwise.
And I think what actually legitimizes government is the victim mentality that people get. Oh, well, you know, somebody should have been able to stop him from doing this or doing that, and so we need a police force to stop this kind of behavior from happening. Where, you know, back in the ancient times, it was probably more likely that someone would just draw their sword and slay the fucker, and it would be done and dealt with.
Exactly, and that kind of thing is, we're sort of taught to believe that sort of, you know, vigilante justice is wrong, you know, it's not legitimate, whereas, you know, an impersonal system, you know, that has no involvement in any, you know, individual situation has the right to, you know, arbitrate over it and judge it, which to me seems kind of detached, and it's like you say, it's an element of the system that's utterly fucking broken. You know, I think people are more than capable of existing as human beings without having others sort of impose these sort of rules upon us. I think we're more than capable of dealing with our own shit. I mean, the reason people don't is because they're afraid of the same entity that is responsible, you know, for doling with justice in the first place, right? So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, well, what we see is that, and I'm just speculating, but what I see is examples like the story of Sun Tzu. The army that he chose to head up was very small in comparison to the army that he was going to face. I think the numbers were something like 300 to 1 or some ratio like that. But because he was studied in understanding how these things happen, how they transpired, he was able to actually use that smaller force as kind of a scalpel and extract cuts where it needed to be cut to ultimately cause the entire giant that he was up against to fall down. And I think why I'm bringing this up is because I think that people would naturally clan again. That would be what happened. If all government stopped today, we would go back to a tribal system of living.
Well, in a sense, we already do. I mean, we all sort of have our group of people, you know. Think about it. Like, if someone that you knew were to die, you know, it would emotionally affect you because that's your people. But if someone, you know, abroad, like if you watch on the news, a plane crashes into a mountain, 50 people are killed, you know, most people won't be emotionally stirred by that, which is kind of counter to what they feed us, you know, that all people are equal and that we should feel, you know, empathy for everyone equally. And it's all a big egalitarian, you know, festival. But really, in practice, you can see that that's not how it works. You know, we all kind of form our own tribes, whether they're family, whether they're friends, whether they're, you know, people that that see the world the same as us. And we all kind of choose our own. You know, it's still very tribal. It's just we're sort of taught to believe otherwise.
Yeah, I would agree with that everybody develops their circle of friends, but that your circle of friends aren't necessarily practical to your survival as a clan or as an individual. You know, like for instance, I consider you to be of my own ilk. However, you know, aside from the fact that we come together in do this BTR radio show and exchange ideas on Satanic International Network, you know, if if something were to happen and the Canadian government came down on you, I'm, what, 1,600 miles south of you? I couldn't get there in time to help you.
Oh, no, I realize that in the system that we now inhabit, that's it's not really the case. But I'm just saying that, you know, devoid of this system, say if it were to burn tomorrow, you know, these sort of tribes of, you know, people sort of resonating with their own and their own family and their own kind, you know, will still exist. And they would become much more relevant because then they would, you know, they would need each other on a level that we don't at this point, right? It would sort of return to that that sort of tribal sort of tribal natural human way that we've lost over, you know, over the millennia.
I completely agree with that. And what's really interesting, I think the biggest dupe that has happened so far, the biggest rope-a-dope or sleight of hand trick that has happened, is that somewhere along the lines we started pushing this idea that man wasn't a cold-blooded killer. That man wasn't a murderous, greedy, gluttonous monster. And so I guess what I'm kind of getting at is that the ones that recognize that nature oftentimes strive right towards the top. And once they get there, well, of course, since everybody else is, you know, all wonderfully snug in their little beds at home, they're going to extract their force without very much resistance.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, once you're, you know, working within the system, you really have no impetus to tear it down. You know, that's just it, though. I kind of see, like, people that there's really two ways to deal with the system, right? And this is kind of my beef that I've recently been cropping up in my mind with modern Satanism and modern occultism, is that it kind of, like, and, you know, it might describe it as Magian occultism. Like, I agree with most of what Anton LaVey had to say, but he stopped too short. You know, and the same goes with the Wicca and Thelema and all these other things where, you know, they sort of provide a place for people to rebel, but within the system, without, you know, it provides an outlet for rebellion that fits squarely within the boundaries, which really prevents any sort of real sort of dissension. I mean, look at, like, LaVeyan Satanists, for the most part, are trying to, you know, get their version of Satanism accepted by society. They want, you know, they want rights, they want to be accepted, and really, that, to me, that defeats the whole fucking purpose, man, because if you're trying to break the system, or if you're against the system, but yet at the same time seeking its, you know, approval, or its, you know, its, yeah, whatever, I've lost the word I was looking for, but, you know what I mean? Like, if you're looking for its approval, at the same time as you're trying to rail against it, you're really only playing the game that they want you to play, you know.
Right, right. Well, you're setting yourself up to be a martyr, and contrary to what most people believe about martyrs, the one thing that I can say is that the good that it does to be martyred is far outweighed by the damage that you do in identifying with that kind of mentality. You know, oh, I'm the big rebel, I'm the big rebel, I'm the big rebel. And then you overdose on drugs or whatever, and what happens? All of your family, you know, they stand around crying about you and then crusading against the thing, very things that you were, you know, pushing forward in your life anyway.
Exactly. So it's ultimately a tool. You're working for them, not against them. That's what I'm saying. If you work within the system. And you've hit the fucking nail right on the head as to why. You know, because the backlash that will happen, you know, it'll ultimately strengthen the system. So it's counterintuitive. If you're really, you know, one of the devil's own as opposed to one of the devil's sycophants, if that makes any sense to you.
Right. Now, but the thing that I've had trouble with, and the whole reason that I was in the first place drawn to the analogy of reality being a prison was the fact that, you know, a prison break can't happen on a large scale. Like, if there's a riot in a prison, nobody's getting out. As a matter of fact, the only thing that's happening is people are getting dead inside those walls still. But if a few people could come together and plan, you know, a right way to tunnel out and an escape to some imaginary place where there's no reach from the overarching machine, then, you know, that whole deal might actually be a pretty good thing. But what I've come to instead is that you can't escape this system at this point. There's just, it is a worldwide global system.
I agree. And this is how I see it. You know, I see ultimately, the ultimate idea of breaking the system is a vehicle to really, to achieve that result within the self, if that makes any sense. You know, like, to ultimately be free of the system, you know, the idea of the system itself has to become poison to you. You know what I mean? And then eventually you can come to realize, you know, like to return to your prison analogy, for instance, you know, say a couple of people do break out of the prison. The majority of the people in the prison aren't even aware they're in a prison. You know, they're not even aware. If you can make these people aware that they are in a prison, you know, more and more people might break out, you know, and then maybe eventually the walls might actually get blown up and taken down. But in the meantime, you know, you're going to have more and more people escaping from this prison. And realizing, of course, they were imprisoned, and that there is, in fact, a way out, even though it might be quite difficult.
Right.
Nothing worthwhile is ever easy. You know what I mean?
The problem then becomes, though, the people that escape, they don't ever, like, you know, mail, you know, some kind of document back to, you know, the prisoners that are still in there with the exact escape route that they took, or some kind of method. The people that have already left the building aren't coming back for you. So, you know, in the meantime, all you can kind of rely on is these guys that have this idea of how you might get out of the building. And with every attempt at a prison break, you know, there's a good chance of failure.
Oh, of course. So that's just the thing, right? Like, you know, to continue this analogy even further, those people that broke out of the prison will send back some correspondence, you know, how to get out, you know, in the form of like some writing or, you know, some philosophy or whatever, if you want to return it to the real. But there will also be, you know, countless other things that will be, you know, written in there that will detail other ways. Many of them are not the actual way. And there will also be other things written, you know, telling them that they're not in a prison, that they should be comfortable there. And, you know, many people will believe these things. It'll only be a select few that will actually, you know, resonate and go the way, the true antinomian, you know, heterodox way, which is quite alien to most. You know, most people are comfortable within the system, and they're comfortable playing at being a rebel. But when it comes to actual, you know, practical, sinister deeds or actions, that's where they draw the line. It's like, no, I don't want to actually sit up from my computer and do anything. I just like to talk about it, you know.
Right.
That's the line.
And it's always obvious because, you know, they'll have all of the trademarks of somebody who's participant in the system, money, ridiculous toys like $6,000 sex dolls.
Oh, I wasn't going to go there, but I'm glad you did. Anyway, go ahead.
And they'll talk this huge game, but they don't have a plan. They don't have a map. And they have no correspondence from anybody that has been outside of that system. There's nothing there. So, in essence, all they're doing is spinning your wheels and wasting your time, which, as we all know, is limited. I mean, what the average human lifespan is 60 to 80 years. You know, that's not a lot of time to figure out how to get the hell out of this thing. So I've actually come to this conclusion that the only way to break this machine, to break this system, is to poison it from the ground up, to make it sick, to dysfunctional and weak. And that's the only way that you could do it. Escaping from prison is, well, every year that goes by, every person that escapes, every attempt that is made, it becomes more and more impossible to do.
Yeah, you know what? And that's really why I've always resonated with the ONA stuff, because that's just it, man. You know, you have traditional occultists like LaVeyans, like, you know, and I resonate with Anton LaVey quite heavily, so I don't want to go and alienate all the people that are call themselves LaVeyans, but, you know, generally they will their approach will be to work within society and to change society, you know, to, but then there's another way, which is the opposite way, which is to, you know, bring it to critical mass. You know, you can try to work within society and bring it back down to where you want it, or you can try to feed the machine, feed the problems that it has, like you say, poison it, try to bring it to critical mass and then go that way. And since it's already headed in that way anyway, you know, as opposed to trying to stop it and bring it back down to something reasonable, it makes more sense just to feed the machine, feed the beast, and let it to, you know, let it self-immolate. Even if that's just on an individual scale, you know, even if it's just within yourself, freeing yourself of these memes and these of these ideas, but using that as kind of like a keystone, you know, like once you realize society itself is broken, and it wouldn't faze you to see society break and burn. It's a real sign of, you know, liberty within yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like the macrocosm becomes the microcosm.
Right. Absolutely. I think, you know, these are just things that people really need to stop and examine and really look at how you take part in the system. The thing about the system is that it's so complex. It's so interweaved that sometimes you can sit there and think to yourself, oh, I'm free of all of these ideas. I'm free of all of these things. But as you look around you, you're still paying for your cell phone. You still got cable internet in your house. You still got, you know, your favorite beer in the fridge. You still got food in your freezer, and you didn't have to go hunt for it. Ultimately, you're still dependent upon it.
Oh, I hear you. And I'm not really calling for a return to the caveman days myself. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with people brewing good beer or providing internet. I mean, technology is what it is, and it's going to continue to be what it is. But, you know, the overarching sort of sense of, you know, of sort of this sort of Abrahamic memoplex of how we're supposed to behave and how we're supposed to act with these things, you know, or you know, irrespective of them, is the real problem. I mean, we could, you know, we could be free of these things and still be drinking our favorite beer and, on, you know, going on the internet. There's other ways of organizing society without having it, you know, being done by one sort of entity with a legitimacy, you know, an imposed sort of monopoly of force, you know, that has been, you know, arrived at as legitimate through these sort of sets of memetics that we're all exposed to from birth, you know.
Right. Now, I'm not by any means trying to, you know, knock down anything you're saying, and I'm sure you know that already. But what I'm really getting at here is that anytime you put a system back up in place of a system that's just been taken down, sooner or later its face kind of becomes familiar, if that makes sense to you.
Oh, of course. You know, most people are, you know, just waiting to be told what to do. And people are, you know, animals. We have our tendencies, we have our predispositions, we behave in certain ways. There's a, you know, some of us are a little different than others, you know. Some of us are, you know, there's a certain sort of sinister kind of person that doesn't resonate with this sort of, you know, watching Survivor on Thursdays and, you know, going to work and going to sleep and having that life be completely satisfactory, you know, being sort of hooked into the system, going to school, going to buy a house, become indentured to the system that way, you know, pay off their education, you know, and they think that, you know, these goals that are set in front of them are the goals that they're supposed to want, and that's fine for them. But, you know, some of us realize that these goals that are set in front of them aren't their goals. They're the goals they're supposed to want. They're following the carrot. It's like if they got a stick attached to their head with a string and a carrot, and they're just following it around. They, you know what I'm saying, man?
I do. I think that that's actually a perfect analogy for what's really going on, because when you really stop, and this is why I, getting back to my moving actually, and why I've chosen a minimalist lifestyle, I don't move for the carrot. I do not move for the carrot. Oftentimes, while everybody else is trying to get a hold of that nice lush carrot, I'm crawling up a palm tree to get a coconut, because I want a coconut instead, you know.
Fair enough, man. Yeah, no, I'm picking up what you're putting down. And that's just it, though, you know. Like, most people would just rather have the carrot, you know, because the coconut's up there, and they got to climb for it, and the carrot's right in front of them. Even though they're never going to catch it, they're going to keep chasing after it, because it's right in front of their face.
Dan, we've actually got a caller that's sitting on the line, so let's go ahead and bring them on.
All right.
Caller, you're on the news.
Hi, guys. It's Bobo.
Oh, hey,
hello, Bobo.
Hi. I was just listening, and I actually, part of my whole journey has been becoming capable of actually not being able to not live on the system and actually making myself do that as much as possible to kind of break that whole societal ideal that exists.
Well, how's that been working out for you?
It actually has worked out well. Like, I started hunting and, like, I got in shape and lost 80 pounds. And, you know, like, I've just been taking steps the whole time to do that. Like, if it all ended tomorrow, could I live without it? Like, you know, seriously, like, hunt and get my own stuff and all that. That's actually a pretty big part of my own personal thing, is that, like, you should be capable of it if necessary.
Oh, I agree with that. I'm the same way. I'm very self-sufficient when it comes to, I could go out and live in the woods for 3 months quite easily and come back well-fed. You know, I grew up on a farm. My dad was a hunter. And, you know, when it comes to survival and stuff like that, I find that very important myself.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I think it kind of, I don't know. I was an overweight housewife before I started kind of operating that way. And, yeah, no, it's a pretty big difference in my general mentality because of that, just overall. It's like, you realize that you don't need pretty much any of the things that you think you need or people tell you you need.
Right. I would agree with that. It does ultimately rest on what you're trying to do, what you need, though. And so that's something that certainly has to be differentiated, just at least in a slight bit of making note that, you know, depending on what it is we're talking about, you may need the things that people tell you you need. Like if you have rabies, well, you need rabies vaccination. There's just about that. But ultimately, you don't need to have the material items that everybody would like to say you do. You know, there's no reason to have a big fancy car when any running car, dependable car, is good enough to get by. Or if you're like Dan Dredd and you have a cape, you can just fly to work. You don't need the car.
I don't have a cape. I have a like flying motorcycle sort of thing. But anyway,
right on. So I have a lot of respect myself for what are they called? Survivalists? I think that's the term. I've got a lot of respect for those kind of people because, you know, if there was some kind of weird nuclear holocaust and they happened to not get, you know, eaten up by the radiation or the blast, well, they're most likely going to be the ones to repopulate this planet.
I actually am a survivalist.
The thing that gets me, though, and this is my one argument towards it, is that, you know, granted there's no, I don't know, global catastrophe that happens that knocks down the government, you're never going to get free enough of the actual system to use those skills, you know? You can go hide in the woods for 10 years, but eventually somebody's going to realize you aren't paying income tax, and, you know, they're going to come after you. It's going to happen. Every time anybody has ever tried to separate themselves from the larger machine, the machine gets pissed and comes and fucking grabs you up. I mean, I can think of Waco. I can think of I can think of probably a dozen different scenarios.
See, that's just it, Beast, and that's kind of where it brings to the sort of darker side of this whole satanic thing. You know, you can move out in the woods and you can isolate yourself and maybe even form a hippie commune or whatever, but really you're not doing anything for yourself or for, you know, or to do anything, you know, against the this thing that you really don't like, the system. You know, I find it's more for the self and for the general sort of, you know, system itself. It's better to actually do, you know, practical, I hate to use the word sinister, like sinister deeds against society. You know, like when you think of the word crime, like is that something that's going to be a deterrent to you? Do you think that like that those things that are considered as criminal are objectively wrong, or do you think that, you know, because personally I don't, you know, I think that the way to really separate yourself on a subjective level from the system is to, you know, you can talk about it, you can read about it, but actually doing shit, you know. And I'm not advocating that you go out there and do crime, because that's, you know, that's wrong.
Well, I actually
you know what I'm saying.
Agree with you on that. Yeah, I agree with you. But like, I've had that stage when I was like younger, so I'm kind of out of it. So I do different things now. Like I don't go to Walmart. I don't buy clothing brand new. Like, these are the ways that I actually, like, literally oppose the system. I don't buy into it. We don't have cable. I do have internet. But, yeah, no, like I've, like purged a lot of that stuff off. I grow my own fruits and vegetables. You see what I'm saying?
Sure, absolutely. And I can respect that to a very good degree, obviously, because I myself have a minimalistic approach to life. The other side of it, the other benefit for me of it, beyond being somewhat self-sustaining, is when I do actually indulge in those things, the berry's always sweeter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Hello.
So, I'm trying to figure out how to get us back here to the actual topic of the system at hand, because I think talking about, you know, survival methods or things like that are, I don't know, maybe something that could be a whole other show itself.
Fair enough. I mean, it is kind of relevant in the fact that, say, the system did come tumbling down, but really that would involve like a comet hitting Earth or something. I mean, it is what it is, you know. That's sort of the idea behind Aeonic Magic, too, to, like, sort of contribute to change, to eventually, you know, make change. There's nothing that you or I or even 1,000 of us could do to bring down the whole Magian Memoplex all at once. But what you can do is, on an individual level, reject it. And it's easier said than done, you know, because it's everywhere. And it's, you know, it comes at us from every single direction, you know, through government, through society, through media, through TV, through, you know, what we're supposed to wear, what we're supposed to listen to, how we're supposed to act, you know, the words that we're supposed to say and the words we're not supposed to say, like ideas like racism being completely demonified, ideas like, you know, all of these things that are really, really, you know, corrosive to society. That is completely fucking demonified, you know. And to actually purge these things out and realize that, you know, having these things demonified is only really of benefit to the system itself and not to us, is it's sometimes a very foundationally shaking experience. I mean,
oh yes, it is.
I mean, there's a certain organization, like I could use as an example, that I'm not going to name because you know, I don't think they're worth you know, the time it takes to say the. Anyway, but that are trying to take the ONA Memoplex and sort of turn it into a Magian thing, you know, like trying to remove all of these countercultural corrosive things from it. And it kind of makes me laugh, you know, because it kind of shows that, you know, that they themselves, while, you know, purporting to be, you know, liberated and, you know, all this, are actually just another vehicle of the machine. They're just like they're just as chained as your average Christian. Or any other religion,
right? Well, I've made my commentary on that yesterday. So if anybody's interested in that, they can kind of roll back. But I mean, ultimately, the only way you can really knock down this major system is to, well, A, not participate in it, like you're talking about, and beyond that, poison it, you know, spread the word, you know, that it's always going to be an unpopular opinion. That's something you first have to understand, that if you choose to take up the quest of doing something, I guess you would call it sinister, Dan. Would that be the word that you want to use?
That would be the word that I'd probably use.
If you want to do something like that, you have to realize that it's never going to be a popular idea, that you are always going to be up against huge numbers. There's not going to be a surgence of support that comes up behind you, and it's a suicide mission. It's literally flying kamikaze.
Well, it doesn't have to be. You know, if you have people of your ilk, you know, that are you know, like your own tribe, you know, your own intellectual tribe, your own sort of people that resonate with you on that same level, and you could take action against these things that you don't, to actually poison the system and to be corrosive to it, with the goal really of just creating the sort of individual that is capable of it, you know, which is sort of taking the left-hand path to sort of a deeper level, rather than playing their games by their rules. Picking over the whole fucking table. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I know exactly what you're saying. I'm looking here. Let's see. We're at about 9 minutes. What is the next? Is there another talking point we want to actually cover, or?
No, I think this has been pretty much done. I mean, I could keep talking about this for a while, but.
Yeah.
I mean, we've covered it from the religious point of view, you know, we've covered it from the media point of view, you know, behavioral correctness, political correctness, and it's everywhere. Consumerism, the impetus to spend, we got, you know, the economic sort of impetus that we have to you know, this multi, it's really everywhere. It comes from all these different directions, but I think we've covered it fairly well.
There's a couple of things I actually kind of wanted to bring up towards the end of the show here, not necessarily in relation to what we were talking about, but I guess you could tie it into there. I've noticed since you've popped on as co-host, the term O&A has become a pretty regularly mentioned thing here, and I just wanted to thank you for bringing that element here.
Well, I've always resonated quite heavily with David Myatt and his, his original suspects and the shit they write and the 352. I'm good friends with Shugs, you know, and Mindfox as well, and all these extremely intelligent individuals that have influenced me. So yeah, I could say that I'm, you know, I wouldn't say that I am in the ONA, but I'm you know, definitely I resonate heavily with it, and I'm an associate of those that are. So. It's just, you know, I'd bring it to the table because it's part of what I do.
Right on. Well, I'm curious. Would you then consider, because the concept of sinister honor, as far as I understand it, I think it's a very rational thing. And I was kind of hoping you might take a few minutes to explain to our listeners what exactly that is.
Well, it's sort of a... That would involve more than a few minutes, Beast. But to put it in a nutshell, it's, you know, an amoral sort of sense of honor that where you're, you know, very loyal to your own and you're willing to fight and even die for your own if need be, but not so much for, you know, those that are not of your own.
Right on. And I know this is what we're actually talking about next Saturday, which is why I threw it out there, because I think... some of these ideas that we're talking about here are very relative to what has been being discussed, as far as I can tell, on at least one or two of the 352 blogs that I follow. So I know there's a heavy connection here between this system breaking free from it and the idea of sinister honor. So I thought it would be a nice thing to kind of polish the show out with.
Oh yeah, they definitely can be tied together, you know, especially in the context of those that are willing to, you know, be corrosive to the system. That's sort of what ties them together, you know, the fact that they see this sort of Magian ideal of bullshit for what it is, and are willing to do something about it, you know.
Right.
People to whom the word illegal doesn't mean much, people to whom the word immoral doesn't mean much, you know, it's a very rare sort of person, but you know, you run into them every now and then.
Right, the people who raise their fingers at others that would force them into some kind of political correctness and tell them, fuck you.
Yeah, that too, man, that too, you know. Those with the balls to act and to do, rather than to just sort of talk and still participate, you know.
Right on. So, I just want to kind of put this out here, because those people that you're referring to, that's my kind. My kind of the people that are willing to do things that are corrosive to the system and try to make this place better for people to have their own freedom, because that's really what you've got to do. You can't escape the prison. You've literally got to start, you know, breaking cracks at the foundation.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too, you know. I used to be one that believed that you could work within the system to break it, but I don't think that's possible. Within the context of economics, spirituality, society, any of these things, really, they're too deeply ingrained. It has to be burned down. That's the only way, you know. Whether on a major scale or even within your own mind, which itself, you know, kind of relates back to the fourth way, you know, sculpting yourself down, or the auto-diabolic method. These things all tie together.
Yeah, they absolutely do, and people who misrepresent them, I think, do themselves and everybody else both a big favor and a big injustice all at the same time. The big favor is the more morons that are running around babbling incoherent nonsense that's actually in support of this Magian memoplex, as you describe it. You know, they're killing themselves and making it easy for me to, you know, inject a syringe full of nasty, filthy, infected shit into the vein, you know?
Yeah, that's just it, man. Actually, whether it be online or whether it be in real, you know, real life, I hate to use that distinction, but, you know, to actually, you know, do things, actual deeds, doing it, you know, rather than just talking about it. Even if the deeds are, you know, putting out the, you know, counter memes, you know, like building your own sort of system that sort of inspires people to look past these sort of slave mechanisms that are there, which is, you know, partially what I do online. That's really what I see my purpose online is. It's kind of, you know, break it all down. But you know, I am also quite active outside of my computer doing things that I. Well, much of which I wouldn't discuss on this radio show, Beast. Let's put it that way.
Right on. And I would hope that we'll never discuss those kind of things on this radio show.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably the best.
Yes, it is. Awesome. We've hit another wonderful hour of The Ooze with a Bite. The new Saturday morning OG. Fucking Ooze, or whatever you want to call it, man. It's been fucking great. I'm glad you decided to sign on as a co-host. It's nice to actually have some stimulating conversation going.
Isn't it, though?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm knocking down anybody who's stood in this place before, but this, in my opinion, is the best manifestation so far.
Well, so, I'll take that as high praise from you. So be it.
Right on.
All right, it looks like we're just about out of time here.
Yeah, let's roll the outro. You want to do it, it's outro version 2. It's all the way at the bottom.
Ah, sure. All right.
Thank you for listening to The Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but it's your discretion to come along. Special thanks to Dad Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?